Welcome to today's Association of the U.S. Army Thought Leader podcast on U.S. Army Talent Management. This is Colonel Retired Dan Roper, AUSA's Director of National Security Studies. I'll be serving as your host. To address this complex high-priority initiative, we're fortunate to be joined today by Major General J.P. McGee, Director of the U.S. Army Talent Management Task Force. With multiple deployments both to Afghanistan and Iraq, Major General McGee has served in command positions at every level, from platoon to deputy division commander. He's held key leadership billets in the 82nd, 101st, and 1st Cav Divisions, the Ranger Regiment, Joint Special Operations Command, as well as both Army and Joint Staffs. His most recent assignment was as Deputy Commanding General for Operations for the U.S. Army Cyber Command. General McGee has a Bachelor's of Science in Engineering from West Point, a Master's in Administration from Central Michigan University, and served as National Security Affairs Fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford. General McGee, welcome to today's AUSA's Thought Leader podcast.
Thanks, Dan. It's great to be here.
Before we get into the details of talent management, it'd be helpful to establish some context. The U.S. National Defense Strategy, released in February 2018, asserts that the central challenge to U.S. prosperity and security is the reemergence of long-term strategic competition by revisionist powers, namely Russia and China. Is the current military personnel system developed in the 1940s adequate to meet the demands of this environment?
So, Dan, I think the consensus opinion of Army senior leaders is that the system that we have right now is a good system, but it is dramatically in need of change in order to modernize and be ready for the challenges of the future. If you look at the current system that we execute with how we manage our officer corps, it's really based on two pieces of legislation. So the 1947 Officer Personnel Act and then the 1980 Defense Officer Personnel Management Act. Both of those were heavily steeped in industrial era processes that talked about the management of people. And really, it focused on a couple aspects that really reflect the priorities of the industrial age. So one is this idea of, you know, sort of having a one-size-fit-all officer corps. So an infantry officer is an infantry officer, an aviation officer is an aviation officer, a logistics officer, a logistics officer. And it really says as an institution, what the institution's responsibilities are to take these people who come to the Army as officers, raise them to sort of minimum acceptable level, and then create this sense of interchangeability so you can plug them in without a whole lot of differentiate for the uniqueness of them. We've learned a lot since 1947 and 1980. And so as we're trying to move the Army from this conveyor belt, one size fits all mass production mindset for the officer corps, our challenge, we think fundamentally, is to bring us into an information age, 21st century information age talent management system that starts with the officer corps and eventually moves to the non-commissioned officer corps and the civilian workforce. And what does that say if you're information age when you're managing people instead of industrial age? It means first you spend the time as an institution to understand the unique knowledge, skills, behaviors, and preferences of every individual, because we all come into the Army differently. And we all develop at different paces and different rates within the military. And then we take the uniqueness of the individual to find those jobs and those places where they can best contribute to the Army's mission. And there's a lot more attention paid to the preference of an officer, understanding that preference is one of the key motivators to make people want to continue to stay in the Army and continue to want to contribute to our mission. And so I think the fundamental challenge is how do we take our officer management system, which is, again, really based on these industrial age processes, things like all Army officers have to go before promotions board at the exact same time. Everyone has to move on a certain fixed schedule. The idea that education all sort of is one size fits all, no matter where you come into the education system. How do we take that and make that much more information age? And our goal is to maximize the performance of every member of the United States Army. And by doing so, we're able to take advantage of our greatest asset, our people, in order to maximize our readiness.
Could you go into a little detail on the specific definition of talent as the U.S. Army defines it?
Yeah, it's a great question, because in terms of talent management, what you find is that within any all sorts of different fields, talent management is one of these buzzwordy sort of industry and military-wide terms. And so everybody tends to define it their own way. I won't bore you with all the different ways that people define it, but the way the Army has decided to define it is it's the unique combination of the knowledge, skills, behaviors, and preferences of, in this case, an officer and that's what a talent is. And then talent management is how do we take those into considerations throughout the entire life cycle of an Army officer, which is through the phases of acquiring, developing, employing, and retaining. And so within our mandate on the Army Talent Management Task Force, it's how do we bring these new concepts, these new principles into play for the management of the officer corps throughout the entire life cycle of an Army officer.
Should the Army be looking at this as the improvement of an existing system in a sense of continuity, or is it a profound sense of change or somewhere in between?
So what the very clear guidance has been from the Army senior leaders has been that this is not something that is supposed to be a 10% change. What they have said is that they want to have profound and deep change. And we've been defining that as what we're calling a 10x change. And so let me explain to you the difference between 10% change, which I think as an Army officer, most of us are very familiar with, to a 10x change. And I'll use a different example outside of the Army. But if you took a bunch of Ford engineers and you gathered them together in an offsite and they said the average mile per gallon for every car in the Ford automobile industry, inventory is 50 miles per gallon. And we told those engineers we wanted them to get 10%. They would all get together. They would take a look at the engine. They would find out where they could tighten down some hoses. They could do some tweaking to the engine block, and they would do different things in order to get that additional 5 miles per gallon to get you to 55 miles per gallon. That would be 55 miles per gallon. That would be meeting the 10% goal. That's frankly what we're normally used to as an Army, those sort of changes. But if you grab those same group of Ford engineers, took them to an offsite and said the goal for Ford Motor Company is to have an engine that now operates at 500 miles per gallon worth of efficiency, that would cause them to fundamentally question the role of an engine, its relationship to all its other component parts, the interaction between the engine and the driver, because a lot of driving habits drive your fuel efficiency, and all these other things would become part of that. And so for us, the very clear mandate from Army senior leaders has been to shoot for this 10x improvement, not this 10% improvement. And that very much underscores all the work that we're doing across the board.
What surprised you thus far as you've been trying to make this 10x change? Because that's pretty ambitious, and obviously you can't get there in one specific step.
So I think the things that I see most clearly, and I think some of this was assisted by a tour at Army Cyber Command for 2 years preceding this, is how much of our thought processes within the Army are still very much wrapped up in this industrial aged approach without a full recognition of the possibilities and opportunities that are coming with the information aged approach. And so how we have constructed, many of our viewpoints, how we view future operations, they're still really wedded and anchored to an industrial aged approach as opposed to something that is an information aged approach. So that would be one of them. And I would argue the other one is this, constant discussion that we have about readiness and how the Army chooses to define readiness. So there are lots of different ways we can define readiness, but within the realm of people, we tend to focus on the ideas of short-term readiness in terms of making sure you get officers to fill an assignment in a job without a really healthy understanding about what the long-term implications of some of these actions are in terms of retention of the officer corps, especially when you're talking about retaining the most talented that we actually want to be able to retain over a career for an Army officer. And so I would say those are some of the things that I have found most interesting and compelling as we're moving forward.
What concerns have been expressed by the people that have been brought into this discussion, recognizing it's still continuing? What are the concerns about the potential impact of the changes on individuals, their careers, or life in the Army?
This need for change to our management of the officer corps is widely accepted. Over the last year, I've spoken to over 2,500 officers from the ranks of second lieutenant to four-star general, including active guard and reserve officers. The idea of moving to a talent management system is overwhelmingly well received, and most tell me this is a change that is long overdue for the officer corps. There's one concern that I want to address directly. It is the notion that by allowing officers' preference to be taken into account in a larger fashion is somehow creating a culture that diminishes selfless service. I utterly reject this. We have the most deployed army in a generation, and to claim they are not selfless because people have individual desires, hopes, ambitions, and family concerns is an insult to their many years of service and sacrifice. We want to create a system that maximizes the opportunities for all officers to support the Army mission, and by doing so, create conditions where officers will remain in our Army longer and contribute to our nation in a more meaningful fashion. An overly centralized, industrialized command and control system is not the way we contribute to the readiness of our Army. In fact, this type of rigidity will drive out of our ranks some of our most talented. Every soldier today is a volunteer. Someone who stays in the Army for 20 years has selflessly volunteered multiple times to stay in the Army, often in the face of hardship and competing opportunities outside of the Army. For the last 18 years, we have entrusted officers of all ranks to make life and death decisions in combat. In these environments, they are empowered to make decisions, and the Army supports them. To then take this same office corps and tell them they cannot have a larger role in making decisions about their own careers, and then masquerade this as an attempt to instill selfless service into the officer corps, strikes me as absolutely incompatible with the direction that we are moving as an Army.
The recent National Defense Authorization Act granted the Defense Department some additional authorities, and it speaks to, I think, what you were just opening the door on. And how does that work, and can it work across the three components, the regular Army, the Army National Guard, and the Army Reserve?
So the 2019 NDAA was really a landmark piece of legislation when it comes to the management of the officer corps. It's really the most significant changes to that 1980 legislation called DOTMA. Really, it's the biggest change we've had in, you know, it's been 39 years, obviously, since that's been passed. It gives us 9 very specific authorities with which we can start to demonstrate ways in which we can be much more flexible with the management of our officer corps. Because up until the passage of that law in August, almost a year ago now, many of the changes that were envisioned weren't actually legally permissible because the laws that Congress had passed about the management of the officer corps had been eliminated. So what the 2019 NDAA is it removed this sort of these restrictions that were upon us and have now given us this great opportunity to take them. And so as the Army Talent Management Task Force, what we've been asked to do is take these authorizations, help write the policies to get them into, you know, the Army system, and then oversee their execution as we're going forward. That's one of our many responsibilities, but maybe one of our more important ones.
Could you expand upon the definition of what the Army's calling permeability?
Sure.
Movement individuals across components?
So this concept of permeability is a really important one. And it's one that I think is going to be significantly difficult for us to change because it involves a amount of legislative changes that are going to be required. And it's going to require a degree of unity, I think, amongst all the services. But I think it's very important for us to start stepping out and start enacting these changes. So this idea of permeability means that it is much easier and almost seamless for an officer to be able to transition from the active component to the National Guard or to the reserve components of the military and be able to have that process occur in a way that is timely and effective. And right now it is anything but. Right now there are a number of barriers that hinder the movement of officers back and forth between components. And because of that, we have very talented people who, for all in the active component, officers in particular, who would like to be able to transition over to the reserve component or the National Guard component and maybe be able to come back in. And it is tremendously difficult. And I would even take it one step further. I would argue we also have a great number of Army officers who start out, who do their 5-year additional duty service obligation, maybe staying for a few years, go about in the civilian world, probably develop skill sets that would be really helpful to the Army in terms of our mission. And if they want to come back in, it is exceptionally difficult for them to be able to break down those barriers to be able to come back in, even though we know they're possessing skill sets that would be helpful for the Army to accomplish its mission. And so when we talk about permeability, we normally are focused on this movement between components, but I think really it needs to be expanded to be able to incorporate those in from the civilian field as well, who, you know, maybe some have, you know, been officers before. Maybe some just possess unique skill sets that we think are going to be critical to our Army's mission as we go forward in this rapidly technologically changing environment that we have that we want to bring in, and maybe through measures like direct commissioning, want to have them join our ranks to help contribute to our mission.
As we look to 2028, which is the horizon for the U.S. Army vision, what outcomes do we see as being achievable within the using the lens of talent management?
So I think if we're talking about, you know, a 10-year horizon for 2028, I think there are a couple different things, and I can talk about the more immediate ones, and I think it'll be really interesting to see what this expands into over time. So I think by 2028, what we'll have at the core of this is what we're starting to describe as a data-rich environment about our people. So Dan, I think when you take a look at how we manage our people today, you find that we do it in a very data-poor environment. And the simple idea is that if we have more and relevant information about our people, we'll make better informed decisions building upon that information. And right now, the Army, frankly, does a poor job of gathering all the relevant information that we should have about the management of our officer corps. I'll just give you one simple vignette that I think really expresses this very clearly. So every year, the Army brings in to the active component 5,000 second lieutenants. At the end of 5 years, they've reached the end of their commitment to the Army generally. Some are three, but generally it's around 5 years. Nowhere in that process do we seek to establish which are that group of officers that we wish to retain. What are the talents that we want to have in our officer corps in the future so we can prioritize that we want to keep one lieutenant, maybe the other lieutenant's fine leaving the Army. And as we go through this, you know, very rapid attrition, we drop a whole bunch of officers to the five-year mark. The Army lets that process run itself because we haven't collected the relevant information to help the institution or help commanders retain those officers that we would like. So one would think within an officer corps that comes in at about the three-year time of service, we would have done enough assessments to figure out where these different officers rank on different measurements. We would have done surveys to figure out what their desires are or proclivities are to stay in or to depart the Army. And for those officers who have the right set of talents and who are talking about leaving the Army, we start finding out why they'd like to leave the Army so we can start pulling the levers of institutional power within the Army to incentivize them to stay in and continue to contribute to the Army's mission. Instead, today, we don't collect any of that information and we let the system sort of run itself. And as long as we have enough officers in the captain's sort of cohort to make majors, we're okay without any real respect to how many talented people we've lost along the way. A gentleman a few years ago wrote this book about the Army, and it's called Bleeding Talent. And I would argue that right now, since we don't collect enough relevant information about our officer corps, we really can't define whether we are retaining the talents that we want to have or losing the talents that we want to have because we run the officer enterprise in such a data poor environment. And so that's one of the ways I think that you would see a 2028 system be much better about the data that we have on our people so we can make better decisions. I know that was a long discussion about just one element, but I really do think this idea of data poor to data rich is really foundational to this transformation that we're talking about. What else would it be? I think at the core of it would be a system that has much greater flexibility. So officers able to go along an operational track and institutional track, a recognition that technical expertise is going to play a much larger role in the officer corps in terms of us developing in those skill sets that are redefining the operational environment that we have around us, be that cyber, be that AI, be that bioengineering, all sorts of different fields, maybe hypersonics, that we think are about to emerge over the next 10 years and play a decisive role in the operational environment. I think that's going to lend ourselves to many more direct commissionings into the officer corps because much of this talent that we want to have is not going to come within our service from those we commissioned, 10, 15, 20 years ago, but it's going to uniquely live in the civilian world. So we need to go out and find that talent, incentivize them to come in as officers within the Army to contribute to our mission. And I think it's one that's going to have much greater flexibility in terms of and understanding of preferences and supporting that, certainly within those officers who are most talented and who are most interested in retaining over time.
Your response actually anticipated my next question, which was going to be about measures of effectiveness. So obviously there's a lot of energy being put into this because the Secretary of the Army has made it a very high on the list as far as what the Army needs to focus on, and having tangible steps that build upon what you said. Some things tend to be buzzwords that everybody wants, it just like cyber, right? Like everything's cyber. And so you've lived in both of the buzzword laden areas, and it's the art is turning that into meaningful action. And your response to that question really helped illuminate that.
Yeah. And I think what has been helpful is the very clear guidance and priority that the chief and the secretary, the undersecretary, and the vice have given us to take subsets of the officer corps, run these initiatives with them. So effectively piloting and prototyping with smaller subsets of the officer corps, some of these changes that we're talking about, assessing the effectiveness of these changes, and then determining its applicability to the rest of the Army. And so I think that approach has been really helpful. And I think as we're going forward, we're discovering opportunities that we didn't exist. I mean, this has changed on a very large level. And just if I use my tactical terms, this is a little bit of a deliberate attack in some of the sort of, you know, near-term objectives, but it's much more of a movement to contact in terms of, we don't know what changes these are going to drive. We don't know what opportunities are going to present themselves as we move forward with this on multiple different fronts.
With the initial prototypes that you described, you can't do the whole Army at once. But we're starting with the officers and the three different components. Do we have an anticipated timeline when we expect to start doing prototypes in the NCO Corps?
You know, while we're doing a lot of pilots and prototypes within the officer corps, what's great is that the non-commissioned officer corps, under the leadership of the Sergeant Major of the Army, has already moved out and begun to execute a number of changes that I think are tremendously innovative. So the great thing about the non-commissioned officer corps is that it is all governed by U.S. Army policy, as opposed to by law passed by Congress, which is what affects the officer corps. And so Sergeant Major of the Army has taken that flexibility and has built in a number of innovative approaches that I think we're studying to see how we can apply those ideas to the management of the officer corps, specifically the way they've redesigned how they do their promotions and how they do their selections based on the promotion boards, I think is tremendous. And so what we have is now is a liaison non-commissioned officer who works with the Sergeant Major of the Army's office in order to keep track of all their changes. And then they keep the Sergeant Major of the Army's office informed of the changes that we're doing. And so what we're seeing is a much better alignment between our two efforts. So we're cross-leveling the information as we're moving forward.
Shifting gears just a moment. Talent management, again, Secretary's top priority. Could you talk about how is the work of the Talent Management Task Force and Army more broadly supportive, mutually supportive of multi-domain operations and Army modernization that Army Futures Command is spearheading?
So I think the easiest for me to describe is how it is supportive of modernization. Just as multi-domain operations seeks to find how the Army adopts an information age approach to warfighting, integrating these new domains and these new capabilities that are coming online, I think we are the equivalent in terms of how we're doing that with the people who will fight multi-domain operations. So I think they're tightly nested together. You know, everything the Army does and the Army is unique, I think, as a service is focused on its people. You know, other services tend to focus more on their platform, but the Army focuses on its people. So all multi-domain operations, all of this idea of modernizing of equipment, that's all going to be built upon a foundation of the people who are within the Army. And so we are part of the modernization effort for the people of the Army in order to make sure that we can excel in the challenges of multi-domain operations and future conflict.
Last question for you. The combat historian S.L.A. Marshall observed that the only thing harder than getting a new idea into the military mind was to get an old one out. Is there an idea or bias in current thinking within the Army that the Army needs to expunge or update to best leverage its talent in order to meet the demands of the National Defense Strategy?
I think if there is a mindset or approach, it's one that I think we have grown up with. It's one that I think we subscribe to without even really thinking about it. And it's the idea that the future is going to look a little bit different, but pretty similar to the past. that, you know, if there's a future large war, it's going to look a little bit like World War II, just a little bit faster. And you know, maybe in a different theater of operations, for example, as opposed to. And so I think it is this idea of being tightly nested to the industrial age approach, this conveyor belt system from how we manage our people to how we roll out our new equipment, how we train and educate our force. I think there's all sorts of tremendous work that is happening outside of the Department of Defense that needs to be incorporated into our methodologies to really maximize the talents, not just of the Army, that's a piece, but to maximize the talents of the nation and to get the nation's strength in all of these fields aligned with supporting the Army in order to be able to excel and dominate and win in future conflicts.
Thank you. Do you have any final comments for our listeners on Army talent management, where it is and what to look for in the future?
So I would say that, you know, there'll be a number of announcements that are coming out from Army senior leaders about some of the changes. I can tell you that the Army senior leaders are sincere and interested and driving this change in order to make sure the Army is ready for future fights. That at the core of this is to make the Army better to win a future fight. And so in that way, it is all about readiness for the next fight. We will continue to unveil new initiatives and conduct new pilots and prototypes. You can keep track of what we are doing on our website, which is army.mil/talent. And I'll just say, I think I speak on behalf of all the members of the task force that we are tremendously honored to be given this mission and look forward to the opportunities to help make the Army more ready to win in its future wars.
Thank you, General McGee, for being with us today and sharing your insights and experiences on this issue that's so vital to the Army's success now and into the future. We look forward to keeping apprised of the great work done by you and the Talent Management Task Force. To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. Keep it here for all Army Matters and tune in for next week's episode. Remember, AUSA is the U.S. Army's professional association, providing a voice for the Army and support for its soldiers and their families. For more information about AUSA or to become a member, please visit AUSA.org. Thank you.